Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sean Carey on board today, as always.
Afternoon, sir.
Great to have you on board. Great to have all of you on board out there today. Let's see. What do we have on tap today? Let's see. John Saraceno at 3:35. We're going to go to the NBA Finals in Cleveland with Dieter Kurtenbach from Fox Sports. Greg Pickle, PennLive.com, Patriot News, final half hour. Full day on tap. U.S. Open is back and rolling again. Mr. Ham sent me a text from the corporate tents. He says he's had more beverages than he's seen shots play today.
Now, I hear the Stanley Cup has made an appearance at Oakmont. Now, has Mr. Ham had a chance to get within eye shot of the cup?
No, the cup was put into the players' lounge, I believe. So the cup is in the players' lounge. Happy birthday, Phil Mickelson. Your tea time is 6 o'clock. everything's pushed back. I think Jason Day's, I think Mickelson's like 5:40 and Day's now at 6 o'clock. So, then there's the Art Briles story. We have decided, we, meaning Art Briles, has decided that going quietly into the night is not going to be the strategy. Oh, no. In fact, he has lambasted Baylor in his court filing. I mean, lambasted them. This is Art Briles ripping his former employer, accusing the school of wrongful termination, indicating he has no interest in settling a federal lawsuit filed against him and the university by a woman who was raped by a football player. They filed the motion today as part of the lawsuit. Briles said he wants a judge to assign him a new counsel, and his personal attorney, Ernest Cannon, said the school was using the coach as a scapegoat for its failings in handling allegations of sexual assault. Cannon said this: the conclusion is inescapable that the motive of Baylor and the Board of Regents was to use its head football coach and Baylor Athletics as a camouflage to disguise and distract from its own institutional failures to comply with federal civil rights protections. He also demanded that Baylor immediately turn over the entire contents of each and every one of the litigation files, including the information from Pepper Hamilton. Pepper Hamilton, of course, gave the University of Regents an oral presentation and then issued a 13-page finding of fact that was publicly released to support the school's decision to fire Briles and demote school president and Chancellor Ken Starr. In his only previous statement, Briles had complained that he had not seen the evidence used to fire him. Since then, Baylor has resisted calls, including a demand from its largest alumni group, to release more details from the Pepper Hamilton investigation. Now, they're a private school. So do they have to? No. Should they? Yes. Just because you don't have to do it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. I mean, look, lay it out there. Lay it out there. We're smart enough to figure out whether, you know, what's justified and what's BS. mean, that's what bothers me when they don't put out, this is in any institutional area. Just lay it out there. Don't act like we're not smart enough to figure it out. We are. Take my word. We are. Behind an explosive, what does it say here? Baylor and Bryles could also face NCAA discipline for some of the actions outlined in the Pepper Hamilton report. Now, I don't think the NCAA is going to get involved. I think they're going to, you know, they made so many a mountain of mistakes with Penn State. I don't think they feel they can duplicate that again, especially if it's something illegal. Department of Education, Title IX violations, that's a bit different. You know, was the Cleary Act violated here? That's different. Bryles was named with Baylor as a co-defendant in a lawsuit filed in March by former Baylor student Jasmine Hernandez. Now, she has been very public about what happened to her, so her name has been released because she said it's okay to release her name. She was raped in 2012 by a player who was later convicted and sent to prison. Hernandez's lawsuit claims Baylor knew that Tevin Elliott had a history of assaults, failed to protect her and others who were attacked, and ignored her pleas when she sought help. Baylor attorneys last week told the court that the defendants were seeking a settlement with Hernandez, but without a chance to review the evidence collected by Baylor or Pepper Hamilton, Art Bryles says he's not going to settle and does not consent to any settlement in the case in which he is jointly named as a defendant. And Cannon said they're not going to settle. Now, they are going to have a mediation meeting on the Hernandez lawsuit tomorrow. But he's decided to sit there and fight. In other words, he says, you know, hand it over. Tell me. I want to see what information you had that led to my firing. Good. Now, we may all look at the information and say, you know what? They shouldn't have fired him. Or we may all look at the information and look at it and say, you know what? They're justified in firing him. Right? It's okay for us to see it. I mean, this is not the Manhattan Project. Every company, or in this particular case, they all act like it's the Manhattan Project they're guarding here. Right? We're smart enough to figure it out. So that's one. That's that. You know, obviously the U.S. Open's going on. Baseball's going on. We got the NBA Finals coming up tonight. But that Baylor story, the fact that Bryles is just not going to go into a corner in a fetal position and say, kick me, and that he wants to fight, and he wants the information there so he can give some context to it, that's a big story today. So we will take a break. We will come back with more in a moment as we continue in the Sunbury Motors studio on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. John Saraceno joining us at 3:35 today. Dieter Kurtenbach will join us from Cleveland from Fox Sports. He's the only member of Fox Sports not at Oakmont. And he'll be there to report on the NBA Finals Game 6 coming up tonight. Final half hour, Greg Pickle will join us from PennLive.com and the Patriot News. We'll talk a little bit about satellite camps. So this is obviously a hot topic. We'll get into that. Greg is actually going to end up, and we're going to get him back on the show next week. Greg's going to actually end up going to a satellite camp. So what's the big deal? What's it like? Is it like any other camp that you see, or is it a little bit different? I mean, Greg's going to do a little bit of that, so we'll got that coming up for you a little bit later in the show.
You were telling me what you were up to last night. I had a chance on the way home, had to stop and get some groceries, and ran into Bucknell head football coach Joe Susan, told me to tell you hello. He sends his best. You mentioned satellite camps. He just got back from California. Was doing some camp time out there. Just got back into Central PA.
Very good. Joe Susan's a good man. He's a good man. Bucknell's lucky to have that guy. I'll tell you that. Very lucky. He and Nathan Davis both doing great jobs. Always pleased to have them on the show every week, too, both of them. All right. Talked about what's going on with the show. We talked about Art Briles a little bit and what's happening with him. And the minor league baseball season gets underway tomorrow night. I encourage all of you to go on up to Williamsport tomorrow night. 7:05, historic Bowman Field. To see the opener, Spikes and the Crosscutters, Phillies and Cardinals, head-to-head there. So some of those Phillies draft choices are going to be up there at Williamsport tomorrow night. We've had Gabe Sinacropi on the show before. Gabe is just one of the great guys out there. He's emblematic of so many really good people in minor league baseball. And look forward to seeing Gabe tomorrow night.
Well, he's just been an absolute fixture in Williamsport for so long. Probably had opportunities to go elsewhere along the way. And he is embedded in Williamsport. And, of course, does a lot of volunteer work with Little League Baseball, too. So,
he's a pro's pro. Really like him. I think I mentioned to him one time, he always does the on-field interview. And I think he said something like, he says, hey, what are we going to get you to do? And I said, well, I don't care. Anytime you want, I'll sit there. What the heck? So at some point, we'll see if we can work that out. The Penn State football poster delivery is slated for next week. They have it set for Tuesday. They're distributed at various locations in State College. And they're also going to have some distribution areas across the state. Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Harrisburg. Just fun. Schedule posters. They're always fun. Bring them up to Live for Life. Get them signed. Whatever you want. It's something the players do a great job. They sign everything that people bring by for Live for Life.
Yeah, July 16th, Live for Life. Getting closer.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be at the same spot down at the lacrosse field and at the multi-sport. I'm sure they'll get some idiot to MC it. Oh, wait, I think they already got a hold of him. Yeah, I got an email from PJ last week about that. I said, sure, of course I will. That's going to be 11 o'clock in the morning on July 16th. Arts Festival's later this year because the 4th of July is a Monday. I was all for, look, hey, it's fine. The 4th of July is a Monday. Start the Arts Festival on the 6th. Get it out of the way. Remember, when it comes to art, I've always been one that said six figures are art, too. Might as well go with what my strong suit happens to be. Well,
it's the Center County Great Debate. Which are you, Arts Fest or People's Choice?
Usually blue course or white course. So...
I keep telling myself, oh, I should have took up golf.
You can go out there and hit the little white ball, be alone out there for a little while. It's good. I like it. And we could have done the show down at Oakmont again today, which we could have. We could do the show every day down there if we want. But, you know, have Mr. Ham on. Could have done that. That would have been actually kind of fun, you think about it, during the rain delay. Do the show live from one of the corporate partner tents. I think that would be... That'd be great.
That'd be awesome. Maybe not, are you kidding me?
Maybe not for you. You'd be stuck in the studio like you always are.
You're right.
It's like... What was the heck was the movie? It was Arnold Schwarzenegger. Was in it with Tom Arnold.
True Lies, wasn't it?
True Lies. Or... You know, she thinks he's a boring computer salesman. Instead, he's a spy for the CIA. And at the end of the movie, they're dancing at the White House. Meanwhile, Arnold's back in the van. He goes, when am I going to get out of the van? He says, how come I'm always stuck in the van? You know, that made me think of you. How come I'm the one always stuck here at the studio? How come you're out of the U.S. Open? How come you're out of the... Hey, look, I just compared you to the great actor Tom Arnold. What do you want? Sure, there are no Academy Awards. What does that mean?
Hey, affiliated with one of the great sitcoms of all time.
Yeah, Roseanne.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We'll have John Saraceno in the next half hour. We're going to talk a little bit to him about Muhammad Ali, maybe even the current state of boxing, but other things as well. John, for years, a columnist for USA Today, has done a lot of great stuff in his career. And he and I go back to college days here at Penn State. So I think we're in the same graduating class too. Boy, I'm old. No. I'm trying to think back to my graduation. It was a long time ago. And it's been over 36 years since I graduated from college. Yeah. Half the staff is under 36. Think about that. Think about that. The Pirates going to take McCutchen and move him down to three in the batting order. I think analytics are, I think you need to have analytics so you have as much information as possible, but you have to be smart enough to weed out what you want from it to help you. So this entire deal about analytics. Constructing batting orders out of analytics and so forth. You know, we place great value in the 2 and the 6 spot. Things like that. You know what? After a while, you know, instinct takes over. I want a guy that can get on base at the top of the order. I want a guy that can wield the bat and can has the ability to move runners in the 2-hole. Then I want some power in 3, 4, and 5, all right? Now, if some guy on his computer in the basement doesn't like it, tough. How many wins do you have?
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. John Saraceno in a moment. First, this day in sports history. In 1883, the New York Giants baseball team admitted all ladies for free to the ballpark. It was the first Ladies' Day. I was there. I had to pay to get in. 1938, Jimmy Fox of the Red Sox set a major league record when he was walked 6 times in 1 game. If you have a guy that's hit 534 home runs in his career, you too would walk him. 1951, Ben Hogan won the U.S. Open for a second consecutive year.
It was on this date in 1970 that Brian Piccolo of the Chicago Bears died of cancer. I know you see in the movie where it's portrayed by James Caan, Brian Piccolo playing for the Bears and his friendship with Gale Sayers. But a lot of people don't realize Brian Piccolo was actually a really good college running back. He led the nation in rushing when he was at Wake Forest. 1975, the Milwaukee Bucks inexplicably traded Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to the Lakers. Why? Ride it out. 1991, Otis Nixon of the Expos broke a major league record, 6 stolen bases in one game. Michael Jordan, 1993, drops 55 points in the finals against the Suns. First 50-plus game in the finals by any player since Jerry West in 1969. The difference between West and Jordan, though, is that Jordan's team won that series, and West, of course, ended up losing to the Celtics. That was Jerry West's big problem. They kept facing the Celtics in the finals every year. Very pleased to bring in a guy. The first time we met, he was at the Collegian at Penn State. I was at WDFM at Penn State, and he broke a story on Mike Jeffress leaving the Penn State basketball team under Dick Harter. And I had him on my show to talk about it, and that's going back 37 years, I think, or something like that. John Saraceno. John, my friend, it is great to hear you again.
Steve, I love those dulcet tones. You always sound the same from the first time I met you and heard you on the air to now. It's great to hear your voice again.
Yeah, it's great to hear yours again. You know, Muhammad Ali just passed away. You're somebody like everybody. You cross paths with him so many times in your career. Hey, what was always the lure of boxing to you, and then where did Ali start to fit for you?
You know, watching it with my father, Big John, in Erie, growing up as a kid. I guess that's where it started, watching fights on TV on the weekend, ABC, World of Sports, CBS Sports, NBC at the time, all three over-the-air networks had boxing programming. Certainly Ali, my recollections from the mid-60s and the late 60s, hearing my brother talk about him and reading newspaper stories, and then watching him on TV again. So I became an Ali fan early on. And my father, you know, was always rooting against them. When we watched the fight, he would say things like, why doesn't he shut his big mouth and just fight? Which, of course, made him all more the alluring and attractive, because I wanted to know what he was saying that was annoying my father. And, I just had this instant affinity for Ali, standing up for something. Even though I didn't understand everything that was going on, he seemed to be a man of conviction to me. And, you know, as I got older, I really discovered that he stood for something other than himself. He gave up 3 of his prime years in the ring, gave up untold millions, gave up his title, was convicted, could have been sent to jail before the Supreme Court overturned that unjust decision. So he was my idol as a kid. He was not afraid to speak his mind and what he believed in. He wasn't always right about some things, and I think his metamorphosis over the years, he became a better person. And he was a, you know, he had deep, abiding faith in his religion, and it was genuine. And anybody who came in contact with Muhammad Ali, I think, was a better person for it. I saw it happen many times.
That's what a lot of people said, that he was, it's interesting because Gordie Howe just passed away, and he never turned down an autograph. Arnold Palmer can't make it to Oakmont. He never turns out an autograph. No. Muhammad Ali, same way. Never turned down a picture or an autograph with anybody. What is it about maybe that era? Were they cut from a different cloth, or was it just because the eras are so different now in terms of how fans react to athletes?
I think it's probably a combination, Steve. I mean, I think sensibilities were different then. I think athletes, they weren't in demand the way they are now. They weren't, you know, the demands on today's superstars and even more generic athletes is great. And I'm not, you know, trying to make excuses for them because I don't think there is any excuse for not signing. You know, the only time I don't like that is if somebody's having dinner or doing something with their family and somebody is just kind of rude and thrusts the pen and paper in front of them, you know, there's a way to do it. Sometimes you have to wait a long time to get that autograph. Certainly, the superstars you mentioned, Ali would sign these religious pamphlets. I've watched him at his home for hours ahead of time because he wanted people to know more about Islam. So he would sign them in advance and then dole them out by the hundreds. He'd have a suitcase and he would stand anywhere in a hotel lobby, a street corner, a restaurant, and pass out these pamphlets. And you could also see how his signature changed over the years because of Parkinson's. It was much different at near the end of his life. And of course, he didn't sign anything probably the last several years.
You gave praise recently, by the way, to someone else who is in the twilight of his career, and we will not have him around on the air much longer, and that's Vin Scully. Bob Nightingale wrote a great piece about Vin Scully. When you see the passing of that and what he has brought to my profession and altogether, what do you think about him and the piece that Bob wrote?
Well, I did read Bob's piece, and it was usual fine work that he does in USA Today. You know, Vin, I mean, what can you say about Vin Scully? I mean, I don't even like the word amazing because I think it's overused in our lexicon. But I think in the case of Vin Scully, if you look at when he stepped in a broadcast booth, when he started calling Brooklyn Dodger games, and how much time has passed, and how he's still able to do it. Maybe he is not on 100% of his game. How could he be? But his ability to storytell and paint a picture and not talk constantly on the air to allow some dead air, some space, to allow a rhythm in a broadcast, I think it's, well, amazing. I really do. I mean, who holds on to a career, much less the same job with the same organization for well over a half of a century? It doesn't happen very often. And so he's a Hall of Famer, and I don't know what else you could say about Vin Scully's career other than he is, you know, he's right there at the very top. I'm not saying I think he's the best baseball broadcaster of all time, because they all have different styles and ways to convey a game, but he's right at the top.
I want to ask you about the profession itself. Give me at least the audience an idea of how the profession of journalism, the profession of writing has changed and what the expectations are now compared to the expectations when you first came out of Penn State in 1980.
Night and day. Horse and buggy and motorized vehicle. hot lead type. Internet. I mean, It's just there is no comparison other than your mandate is to convey information accurately, fairly, and hopefully in an interesting manner to make people want to finish what you've written. I just remember leaving Penn State and going to my first Gannett newspaper in Danville, Illinois in 1980. and we were still looking through newspaper. You know, they had all the bound volumes of newspapers, and you go through clips to do some research on the high schools and the colleges, and, you know, the video display terminals, which thankfully we even had those at the Collegiate in the old Carnegie building. We actually, you know, they were, you know, they were on the trend of something there. They at least had the tools we needed. I also remember pounding away or typing away on the Selectris, IBM Selectric typewriters, you know, and using whiteout, and make a mistake and all that. I mean, it was so ponderous when you think how much you had to do to write compared to the rapid nature of today's technology. So basically, I think, you know, storytelling and news gathering, at the core, I think it's the same, but how it's presented, when it's presented, what form it's presented, and including, you know, video and podcasts and all the permutations of using today's technologies has drastically reformed the way probably journalism schools and newspapers and editors and reporters have to look at the craft of journalism. I think something's been lost in it. I mean, I see things, I read things, and I'm kind of disappointed that beyond the demise of the traditional newspaper, where that's headed, I don't know that the care, the thought, the planning, the execution. Certainly there are news groups that are still very good at it. The New York Times, I think USA Today does an excellent job. I'm not just saying because I worked there for 30 years. I think they really, there's a lot of good stories on USAtoday.com. You know, the newspaper won't exist at some point. But I think there are some new news gathering companies that still try to do it the right way. But there's a lot of junk out there, too. And it's just designed as clickbait on the Internet. And I don't think it really adds anything. But I think it's also democratized journalism, and now everybody has a voice. Whether you want to hear everybody's voice or whether they're informed voices, that's another matter. But certainly it's no longer the province of just wealthy journalism publishers. Now everybody can publish. So I think... as long as there's a responsibility that goes along with it, I think that's a great thing for everyone.
I went down to Dallas a couple of years ago when my broadcast partner for basketball, Dick Girardi, was inducted into the U.S. Basketball Writers Association Hall of Fame. And one of the other inductees, and he worked in Memphis and had been there for 40 plus years. He was doing talk shows. Plus, yeah, Mike DeCourcy was the one that really pushed to get him in. He said when he first started out, he ran into at the Masters Red Smith, and he said, "Mr. Smith, it's such an honor to meet you." He says, "Can you give me any advice on my career? I'm just trying to really get this thing going here." And he said, "I have two words for you: be there." Are enough broadcasters or journalists, are they there enough these days based on the constraints that everyone has to work with?
You know, it's. I think if you work for a traditional newspaper or magazine or a website that's into serious daily journalism and news gathering and publishing of stories, features, columns, I think you have to be there. And because I'm no longer in a press box on even a semi-regular basis, I don't know if I have the answer to that. I'm not sure what the sense of that is out there.
Right.
One particular bone I would pick with your industry, and I love radio. I mean, I wanted to do radio. When I went to Penn State, I wanted to be in radio. I went to the... It's a long story. It's too long for now. But I went to the campus station where you were at, and they gave us a tour, and I watched somebody in there, some young guy, spinning around in his chair, potting up stuff and talking at the same time and taking carts down. And I go, I can't do this. And so I walked over to the Collegian. You know, and I had been writing since I was in junior high for the paper, but I really wanted to go into radio. And I'd still like to have a gig in radio in case anybody's looking for somebody, but they're really not looking for people like me. I understand that. The problem I have with sports talk shows, generally speaking, not all of them, there's a lot of really good ones, but there's a lot of bad ones. I should say there's a few good ones and a lot of bad ones. Mm-hmm. Is that if, when the people are speaking, the show host or whatever, I can tell almost immediately if they know anything what they're talking about, or they've ever been around, or if they've ever been in a locker room, a press box, met a general manager, gone to a draft, covered games. It instantly becomes apparent to me what their level of expertise is, as opposed to just doing a lot of research and reading a lot of stories from journalists and then trying to form their own opinion around those views. So I guess that's a roundabout way of answering that.
Well, actually, I completely agree with that. And I think that also leads to what I think is a lot of irrelevant talk. And let me give you just one example. So I've had a bone to pick about this. For example, X needs to win this to cement their legacy. They need to win it for like everybody there. I mean, I think you, yeah. You know, I find stuff, that kind of talk to me, I find to be boring, irrelevant, and
shallow.
Goes back, I think, to the point you just made. Have you ever really been around it before?
Right. Yeah, I can understand how it would happen, because if you're in radio, I mean, there are radio people who have experience reporting, such as Jerry Coleman down in Baltimore. I mean, he actually has been a reporter, and he does radio. But I think it seems like the exception to me rather than the rule. And I don't think if you don't have some of those sensibilities about how business is conducted and have some firsthand knowledge, talking to players face-to-face, talking to management face-to-face, you just don't really understand. I think that's why a lot of, frankly, if you talk to team executives and players, where they have absolutely no use for sports talk radio, because they know what they're hearing is mostly inaccurate, a mixture of inaccuracies, overstatement, hyperbole, misinformation, all sorts of things. There's just so many things wrong that you hear, at least I do. And I just wonder, how do these guys get these gigs? But it is what it is. And having said that, there are some fine broadcasters, and certainly on television there's a lot of people that do know what they're talking about and have been there and done that. I think radio lags its competitors in that regard for whatever reason. Maybe guys, you know, they land a radio gig and they're good at talking. They can keep a show lively. They're highly opinionated. They have it's that almost that barroom banter between two guys. But I find a lot of it inane. I really do.
Yeah, I agree with that. John, absolute pleasure. How's Sebastian, by the way?
He's doing well. He's teaching and tutoring for my wife's company back in Virginia. You know, he worked for the Dodgers. And did two internships there, but really decided that baseball was not going to be his career, and wanted to come back to Virginia. So he's doing great. Great kid. Thanks for asking.
Oh, please tell him I said hi. He is an awesome young man. John, this was great. I appreciate the time so much. I look forward to getting you back on and exploring a wide variety of topics with you, because we don't talk often enough.
Anytime, Steve. Great speaking with you again. And say hello, everybody, in State College. I send my best.
Absolutely. John Saraceno. One of the best, I'll tell you. Very fortunate to have crossed paths with him at Penn State, and we've always kept in some contact. And his son Sebastian was here. In fact, Sebastian worked as one of the Penn State baseball announcers for a period of time on Penn State baseball, and Sebastian did a really, really good job. All right, we will come back. Next half hour, we'll go to Cleveland. We'll go from Virginia to Cleveland to talk to Dieter Kurtenbach, who's covering the NBA Finals for Fox Sports, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.